I'm Marty Moscoe, and you're listening to Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. Candidate Donald Trump blasted the 2015 Iran nuclear deal negotiated by the Obama administration and last Friday took steps to end it. It's called the JCPOA, the Joint Comprehensive Plan of Action, saying that Iran was violating the spirit of the deal and accusing the government of fueling conflict, terror, and turmoil in the Middle East and beyond. The president decertified the agreement and tossed it to Congress to make the next move. We asked Dan DeLuce to join us, national security reporter for foreign policy. And Dan, nice to have you back with us on Radio Times.
Good to be here. Thank you.
You're welcome. And to our listeners, lines open at 1-888-477-9499. You can also send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org. And you can tweet us at WHYY Radio Times. Dan, the president could have by himself ended the deal, at least for the United States. He didn't do that. He called on Congress to fix it. And if they don't fix it, then I guess he can withdraw the U.S. from the deal. Why do you think a kind of a convoluted decision on the president's part?
Well, part of it was his advisors and his cabinet secretaries were telling him that the U.S. should stay in the deal. So he was frustrated with that advice in part. And of course, he was also listening to people outside the administration have a more hawkish view. So at the moment he was persuaded it was not the time to pull the plug on it. It was also it's similar to the Affordable Care Act. Hmm. It's this kind of approach where there's really kind of highfalutin rhetoric, very aggressive rhetoric, but then the action is somewhat watered down, and he passes the buck in a way to Congress for the moment. But nevertheless, he's opened up a whole set of possibilities, and some would say a Pandora's box. This may be the beginning of the end of the agreement.
And I want to pick up on that, but just to underscore what you said, the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff said that Iran is abiding by the deal. Mattis said the deal is in the U.S. best interest. And in many ways, Iran is abiding by the deal, whether you like the deal or not. When the president talks about violating the spirit of the deal, what do you think he's referring to?
What you hear the administration and some others say is that who support this action is that he is actually referring to a U.S. law which was passed when Obama was president as a way of kind of pressuring a Democratic president over this. And every 90 days, the U.S. president has to certify to Congress whether the agreement is in the interest of the United States and whether it makes sense to continue to keep the sanctions that were lifted off of Iran. So it's a very vaguely worded piece of U.S. legislation. And so when we hear the phrase decertify, that's what the president's referring to. He did not come out and say the U.S. is withdrawing from the actual international agreement that's between Iran and not just the United States, but France, Britain, Russia, China. So that's what he's referring to. But also, when you hear him talking about spirit of the deal, sometimes you hear administrations say, officials say, well, yes, Iran may be technically in compliance, but, for example, the agreement doesn't require Iran for certain to allow inspections of all its military sites. So it's sort of this argument, we don't know, we don't know. Maybe they have secret facilities where they're doing secret work that we don't know about.
So what are the options then before Congress? And they're also under a deadline, what, either 60 or 90 days they have to make some kind of decision.
That's right. So under this U.S. law that requires the president to certify whether we should stay in this, whether it's worth staying in this nuclear agreement, Congress now has 60 days to decide whether they want to reimpose the sanctions that were lifted as part of the agreement, right? So the agreement was very – the idea of it was fairly simple. It was, okay – Iran, you agree to very strict limits on your nuclear program. You have to stop enriching so much uranium. You have to dismantle a plutonium reactor and so on and so forth. In return, the U.S. and other countries will lift sanctions on the Iranian economy and restrictions on oil purchases and so on. So so it could be a simple majority that could reimpose these sanctions in Congress. Wow. However, the administration is not pushing them to do this. And you don't hear even the more hard-line voices in the Republican caucus saying that they want to see the sanctions reimposed, at least for the moment. And so I think the idea behind all of this is kind of a gamble by the White House and the Republican majority that they can kind of scare and push Iran into making concessions, that somehow the threat of drastic action by the United States will somehow create the momentum for a new negotiation to somehow fix the deal or have a new deal brokered that would put even more tighter restrictions on Iran. That's a very big gamble.
Well, let me quote the German foreign minister. He said this on Saturday. He said, my big concern is that what is happening in Iran or with Iran from the U.S. perspective will not remain an Iranian issue, but many others in the world will consider whether they themselves should acquire nuclear weapons, too, given that such agreements are being destroyed. That's a very bold and, frankly, kind of scary comment from the German foreign minister. Do you share, do others within the foreign policy community, do they share that concern?
I think you hear that from a lot of former U.S. officials who served in the Obama White House. You hear that from other European diplomats, certainly. This is one of the arguments to stay in the agreement, that it may be imperfect, but it does, for a certain number of years, 10 or more years, prevent Iran from building nuclear weapons, and they have to submit to pretty strict inspections of all their nuclear sites. And the comment from the German foreign minister is something others have raised too, which is, you know, it's not only about Iran and its nuclear program. What is the signal it sends if the agreement collapses, or if the U.S. is seen to be going back on its word and changing its stance, reversing its stance? What does the North Korean regime supposed to draw from that, right? You know, why should a regime or government enter in negotiations about its nuclear weapons or an arms control agreement with the U.S. if a new U.S. president after election is simply going to tear up whatever was negotiated? So the stakes are very high here.
Well, let me quote Secretary of State Rex Tillerson. He was on CNN's State of the Union yesterday. He said, speaking of North Korea, he said, I think what North Korea should take away from this decision is that the United States will expect a very demanding agreement with North Korea, one that's very binding and achieves the objectives, not just of the United States, but the policy objectives of China and other neighbors. And basically, what he seems to be saying is that if we get tough, that will force some kind of diplomacy with North Korea. How do you see that?
Well, that's the other argument that's being made. One should point out that any negotiation with North Korea right now looks pretty remote. It's not. It doesn't seem that there's any imminent chance right now for a negotiation with North Korea. Of course, there were elaborate talks that went on for many years with North Korea, and they collapsed during the Bush administration. And that's a whole other debate and argument about what mistakes may or may not have been made in that discussion. But yes, the Tillerson's argument, the administration's argument is, you know, by getting really tough with Iran, that sends a signal to North Korea that, you know, they're not going to be allowed to get away with what they're getting away with now with their nuclear program and their ballistic missile program. Of course, North Korea is in a different position, again, because they have nuclear weapons. That train is out of the station, and now they have more and more advanced ballistic missiles and what looks like an intercontinental ballistic missile capability. So trying to disarm North Korea is a much obviously a much much bigger challenge compared to what the U.S. and other governments are trying to do with Iran. But the other thing that's coming out in all of this is, as you pointed out with that quote from the German foreign minister, the U.S. at the moment is very isolated. Apart from Israel and some of the Arab Gulf states, the Trump administration's position on the Iran nuclear issue is not going over well. Immediately after his speech Friday, you saw Germany and France, the leaders of Britain, Germany, and France issue a joint statement, which is pretty extraordinary, basically saying they were very concerned about this, that there were implications to this that were worrisome. They stood by the agreement, and they actually warned Congress and the president not to do something that would cause the agreement to collapse. And then all these restrictions that are on Iran's nuclear program would unravel. Mm. And there's concern that at the end of this path is a potential war, a potential confrontation with Iran, and the possibility that Iran would be actually break out and very quickly build a nuclear weapon.
So Iran, I mean, given their druthers, and if there weren't this deal with inspections, they would be building a nuclear bomb or nuclear weapons?
I think that's the conclusion just about everyone has to come to, given the evidence. They were putting a lot of effort into activities that would only be of interest if you were trying to build a weapon. Right? They weren't just using a low enriched uranium. They were enriching uranium to a weapons grade level. Right? So they were also pursuing a potential path through a plutonium reactor. So. And they continued to build ballistic missiles. So the worry was that eventually they would marry the two. Now, on the other hand, unlike North Korea, Iran wants to be part of the global economy, and they sell oil, as we all know, and that's very important to them, to their economy. So they did not want to continue in the situation under these severe sanctions. So they were ready to come to the table to get those crippling sanctions off of their economy. So it's a different calculus for them, and they were ready to pause their nuclear program for a decade or more and get this relief from the sanctions.
Are we in this strange position where the president is accusing Iran of not abiding by the spirit of the agreement, but if the U.S. pulls out, then the U.S. ends up actually violating the agreement? If the U.S. pulls out, is that a violation, or is the violation really more on Iranian side if they were to somehow break this deal?
That's a good question. First of all, it's not a treaty. It's a very unusual creature we're dealing with. It's an international agreement that was endorsed by the UN Security Council. And under the terms of the agreement, any of the signatories can declare that they're withdrawing. Any of the signatories can say that Iran is violating the agreement and cite evidence of this and withdraw. So President Trump could immediately withdraw from the agreement at any moment. But, of course, this is also about how the other governments will react. So if the U.S. does end up withdrawing from the agreement officially – and reimposes sanctions on Iran, the European governments and Russia and China could choose to continue to do business with Iran. And they could even and the European officials have even warned the U.S. that if they try to impose sanctions on European companies that want to do business in Iran, they will retaliate and even take the case to the WTO. So you could see a real transatlantic rupture if this continues along this path. But yes, I think that some officials in the Trump administration would like to push the situation to the point where Iran violates the agreement. I think that would be the ideal outcome for some people in Washington, some of the more hardline voices. It's almost like they would like to bait Iran into violating it. But so far, I don't see Iran doing that. I think that would not be in their interest. They see the Europeans are in disagreement with the U.S., so I think, in a way, Iran is trying to kind of exploit this disagreement and this wedge between the U.S. and Europe.
And that's Dan DeLuce. He's a foreign policy reporter, and he covers national security. I'm Marty Moscowen, and you're listening to Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. Well, let me do one more quote, and this is from the Iranian President Rouhani. He said, we will continue to stick to the deal and to cooperate with the International Atomic Energy Agency within the framework of international law. Is Iran to be trusted on this?
Well, the Iranian regime has a record of cheating and hiding its activities with the nuclear program. But I think that there is some truth to the idea that Iran will actually continue to stick to the agreement because it's in their interest.
Right.
They don't want sanctions reimposed. And if they can play a divide between the Americans and the Europeans and Russia and China, they might be able to survive U.S. sanctions. And they are all interested in sort of the the battle for world opinion, sort of the court of world opinion. Rouhani, keep in mind, is considered a more moderate figure relatively in that system, and he is under a lot of political pressure because he argued for this whole nuclear agreement and this whole approach. So if the agreement actually does collapse, it also means that figures like him, slightly more moderate voices, will go down to defeat. So ironically, the harder line voices in Washington may give more power and embolden the harder line voices in Tehran.
This is such a complicated part of the world. We have just a couple of minutes, but I'm thinking certainly about what's happening with the Kurds in Iraq today. And, of course, the humanitarian crisis in Yemen about terrorism, ISIS, and I guess the role that Iran either is or isn't playing. And this is where it gets complicated because they also oppose ISIS, as does the United States. But I'm thinking about what's happening in Iraq today with the Kurds. Can you connect that to what we've been talking about?
Yeah, there is a wider kind of rivalry going on and competition for power and influence in the region. And there's no question that Iran, as a Shiite-ruled country, is in a intense competition, rivalry, conflict with some of the Sunni Arab states, including Saudi Arabia and the United Arab Emirates. The Iraqi government is caught in between Iran and the United States. The Iraqi government needs help from the United States, but it also needs to get along with its very powerful neighbor, Iran. And, of course, the Iraqi government is also Shiite-led. So that's sort of how that plays out. And then so the Americans have always been nervous about Iran's role in Iraq. And, of course, after the invasion of Iraq, Iran became much more powerful after Saddam was toppled. As far as the Kurds, Iran, like Turkey, has a Kurdish minority, and they have sought to squelch, crush, and stifle any kind of independence sentiments among its own Kurdish population. And then that Kurdish population extends into Iraq. At the moment, it's not totally related to Iran. Iran probably doesn't want to see a civil war break out between the Kurds and the Iraqi government as much as the U.S. doesn't want to see that.
Right.
It's an example of how the U.S. probably, in an ideal universe, would have at least some kind of communication channel with Iran. I think that was the argument the Obama administration made. You know, yes, this is an adversary and it's a dangerous adversary, but let's try to diffuse tensions over the nuclear issue, and let's try to have at least a kind of communication channel with the regime in Iran. That communication collapsed with the new administration. John Kerry used to get on the phone with his Iranian counterpart. Those days are over.
Wow.
So it means that if you're trying to diffuse a situation like a Kurdish-Iraqi government conflict, you don't have that diplomatic channel that you did, a year ago.
Well, Dan DeLuce, thanks for joining us today in Radio Times, getting us up to speed on this very complicated issue. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
You're welcome. National Security Reporter for Foreign Policy. And after this very short break, we'll be talking about the Affordable Care Act, or what's left of it. We'll be right back.